I'm Emma Martins, and you're listening to The Longest Battle, here on RNIB Connect Radio. The reason I decided to do The Longest Battle is because I caught a virus in 2013 when I was on holiday in Vietnam. As a result, I had to pretty much learn everything again, from crossing a road to making a cup of tea. So I decided that I would talk to other people who have gone through life-changing events. Today, I'm joined by the amazing and incredible Mad Dog McGuinness. Mad Dog is a rock star who's played with the Popes, the Pogues, and many more others beside. Like me, Mad Dog has had a life-changing brain injury when he was hit by a car in North London. In The Longest Battle with Mad Dog, we will hear how he first started playing with bands in Dublin, the first time that he met Shane McGowan, and all about the car accident in North London and his road to recovery and how life is now that he has come out the other side of his brain injury. I began by first asking Mad Dog how he first got into music and playing in a band.
Well, it started back in the late 70s in Ireland. I lived in Dublin, in the postal district was Dublin City 9. So I was standing around with my friends one day and said, let's start a band, because I just began to start playing guitar. And then we were looking for a name, and I kept the name, let's call it after the district we're in, Dublin City 9.
Okay.
And that summer, I went over to Amsterdam, and I was sitting in the Paradiso watching Kraftwerk. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away. So I came back and I suggested that we might be get a synthesizer and be a punk band with a synthesizer. And I said, maybe we can change the spelling of the name, not N-I-N-E. Let's spell it like Germanic so you can see the German influence. So I said to somebody, what's the way you can spell the number 9 in German? And someone said, N-I-E-N. And of course, that's wrong. It's actually N-E-I-N. But we went out and we got some posters, D-C-N-I-E-N. And then when I came back and put the posters up, someone said, that's the wrong spelling of the German 9. But by then we'd already got the posters, so we just continued on
kept
spelling
it as it was.
N-I-E-N, yeah. So that band became quite big in Ireland, and we released a cassette tape called The Red Tapes, which I've recently been back in Dublin, and there's a lot of people interested in seeing it to be getting re-released, and because an awful lot of people were influenced by DC9. The first album I was playing with Shane McGowan and the Popes, because I used to work as a role in the road crew of the Pogues. I used to get up during the sound checks and play guitar and test all the guitars so the band could come on.
So you were roadie, that what you did?
And we were in Japan one day, and Shane was at the front of the stage watching me play some of their songs.
Yeah.
And he liked what he saw. So he came up to me one day and he said he was going to leave the Pogues and would be interested in starting a band with him. So that was the beginning of Shane McGowan and the Pogues, because about 6 months later he left the Pogues, and the agent had booked him an American tour. We had done a little tour of England and we were about to go to America. And one day myself and Bob Dowling, who was the bass player in the band, we were walking down the Holloway Road, and Bob was telling me this story about all the characters on the Holloway Road. There was people like Horse Mulcahy and loads of Irish people, and we were walking past the Holloway Road. We walked past a pet shop and loads of pubs and fish and chip shops and a clairvoyance. And the next day we were walking down the Hollywood Boulevard, and as we were walking down we saw exactly the same things. The only difference was about a couple of million dollars, you know. And Bob was telling me his story. He had told me the story about the Holloway Road, and I turned around and said to Bob, hey Bob, this is very like the Holloway Road, you know, except the difference in money. But it's just there's a clairvoyance, there's bars, lots of restaurants. And Bob said, "Oh, come back to the hotel. I have this idea for a song. It's called The Holloway Road." So we went back to the hotel and Bob showed me all these chords. So I said, "Oh, we should call it Holloway Boulevard, like the Hollywood Boulevard."
Yeah.
And Bob said, "Oh, that's a good idea." So I went back to my room and I wrote loads of lyrics. And it goes, "Platinum rogues in stolen clothes, teaching us how to pose. All they're doing is wearing out their brogues." And then I added the names of the people on the Holloway Road. "Horseman Mulcahy from the West," that's the west of the world, "stripped down to his vest. And Donkey Dordan, see him in his Sunday best." So Bob started to laugh and he showed me all the chords. So I put all the lyrics to the chords. So the song was Bob's idea. And, you know, I completed the song and I used lots of different influence. Like, I used the lyrics, "Lying in the gutter, but they're looking at the stars," which I took from Oscar Wilde. So that's how Amazing. Holloway Boulevard started.
Amazing. Yeah. Wow, okay.
But I'll tell you, this is an amazing story. The Popes eventually, when Shane went back to the Pogues...
Is this the Popes or the Pogues?
Well, I started with Shane McGowan and the Popes after the Pogues.
Uh-huh.
And eventually Shane went back to playing with the Pogues. And I became the singer in the Popes. So we went around touring, you know, places like America again.
Around the world, did you? Yeah, amazing.
France and stuff like that.
Cool.
And I wrote the song. Well, it's the title track of the album. It's called Outlaw Heaven. Because, you know, the one thing that's certain in life is death, you know. So I began to think, where do people go when they die? Because we were traveling down Route 66 in America. And we got out of the van and we sat at the side of the road just to have some lunch. And I was sitting on a headstone and it said, this is the place where Robert Johnson sat and made a deal with the devil, you know, to make him the best blues guitarist before he offered his soul to the devil if he could become the best blues guitarist in the world. And he went on to become, as you know, the best blues guitarist. And I wondered where he went and I thought, well, there can't be any such thing as hell. So I think there's probably heaven where all the good people go and heaven where all the outlaws, the bad guys go. So I sat down and started writing that song, Outlaw Heaven. And it's all about people like Robert Johnson, Johnny Cash, Al Capone. So I wrote the song Outlaw Heaven. It goes, "I'll always be an outlaw. I've ridden on the range, and just like other outlaws, I'd be lonesome on the plains. I was jailed in every county, held up every stage. I've got one foot in the stirrup, the other was in the grave. When I die, I want to go to Outlaw Heaven."
Wow.
So it's all about Robert Johnson and people who've passed away and where they are now. And one day I hope to sit down with them at the bar in Outlaw Heaven and have a drink with them.
And what would you say your career highlight? What would be your career highlight,
The most amazing thing was we were playing in New York on St. Patrick's Day.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, and New York's very funny on St. Patrick's Day. You know,
I'd love to do that, actually, yeah.
They're more Irish than the Irish themselves.
They are.
Everybody's drinking pints of green Guinness.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was loads of ticker tape flying in the air, all green. And we were watching the parade go by.
But you were Shane, were you, at that time?
Yeah, at that time.
Yeah.
The whole band, we watched the parade in New York.
Oh, cool.
And later on, we went down to the Astoria and we played a pub in the Astoria till late that night, and that was, I think, the highlight of and also I have a young daughter called Aisling. And Aisling in Irish means premonition.
Okay.
So I'll tell you another story about that. I had a dream that I was going to have a red haired child, and surely enough she came. Aisling had been born by then, and our mum and herself, her mum was called Lorraine, and herself came to the gig. So that was amazing to have my own daughter. And at the end of the gig, we were playing an encore, and her mother brought her up on stage, and she ran out onto the stage. So that was my most amazing thing. I think that's the best thing that I've ever done.
Yeah.
To become a father.
Now that we've heard all about Mad Dog's music career, meeting Shane McGowan and playing with the Pogues and the Popes, I wanted to find out more about Mad Dog's brain injury and what life was like in hospital.
I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
Because I think your brain protects yourself from the actual injury, and it forgets all about it. But I've been told, I was coming home from the gym one day with my training bag on my back, and a car came out. Some guy from India had been over here, and he was holidaying, and yeah, he hired a car, and he was driving a Renault on Brook Road in Stoke Newington, and that knocked into me on my left hand side, and I was unconscious.
It hit you. Yeah, it hit you in a car. The actual car hit you. Yeah.
And then I was in some London hospital.
You had no recollection of the actual accident and things.
No recollection at all, or the people who were there, or whatever happened that day. The last thing I remember was that evening. It was November of 1996, I think. It was November 2014.
Okay.
And the last thing I remember was going on the bus down to the gym. I don't remember anything then till I woke up in hospital in, I think it's the...
The Royal London.
The Royal London Hospital. Yeah. Yeah, I was in there.
That's the place I was admitted to.
And that was very strange. You know, I started hallucinating and having very funny dreams, which I always thought were reality. I woke up one day and, you know, I'd have a nurse beside my bed.
Yeah.
Then I'd fall asleep and wake up and I'd look beside the bed and she'd have turned into sort of, she'd have a horse's face and stuff like that. It was very strange.
How long? So you were in a coma, weren't you?
Yeah, for about 4 weeks.
4 weeks in a coma. And it being in a coma, do you have any, obviously is that the surreal element of it?
Yeah, very surreal.
But being in a coma, did you have any parts of it coming in reality? Were there bits, that came out?
I had, when I was in the coma, I thought I was visiting my mother in Ireland at one stage. I don't know if it was a dream, I don't know what it was, but I dreamt I was on a plane and all my relatives, when I woke up into my hospital bed, around me were all my relatives, and when I looked again, it wasn't my relatives, it was just other patients in the hospital, and I had imagined, so it was very, like that, very confusing.
I had the same thing, actually. I remember seeing one of my bosses there, but I think maybe he did come along, but I like have got that, it was at that point, I just wasn't in that reality.
That's very similar to what I experienced, and I don't know if this happened to you, but when I woke up out of the coma, I started speaking in a different language, like in Irish.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's not called Irish. It's in Irish. It's called Gaelge.
Okay.
So I woke up speaking Gaelic, and
but could you speak Gaelic?
Well, when I was very young, I learned it at school, but I hadn't spoken for years. And I woke up, and other people in the beds around me, because when I was in the Royal London Hospital, there was other people in the bed beside me, and they were doing very strange things, like some of them were speaking Spanish.
I know, they were all doing weird things. Like, my poor mother, what was going on? Yeah. It's quite a surreal experience, but let alone figuring out that.
And the other thing is, sometimes it feels like it's never going to end, all the stuff you're doing, like the therapy, you know. At first, it just seems like thinking, when will this end? Because I used to have therapy 3 or 4 times a day. Different therapists would come along. I just thought, you know, when will things go back to being normal? When I can start playing music again and seeing my daughter and seeing all my friends and so on. But that's started to happen now, because most doctors, and it's funny because when I used to play in a band back in Ireland, which was called DC9, which I've told you about, I went to a hospital one day in town and in the city, and the doctor was treating me, you know, looking at me and examining me, and he turned around and said, "I've seen you before." And I said, "Oh yeah." And he said, he spoke with an Irish accent. I said, "Are you from Ireland?" And he says, "Yeah." He said, "He said, what do you do?" And I told him that I had played in a band in Dublin called DC9. He said, "Oh yeah, I saw you in the Bag It In." So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing what can happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Now that we've heard all about how life was in hospital for Mad Dog and waking up speaking Gaelic, all the therapy he had to do, and starting to play music again, I wondered whether his brain injury was a little bit like being born again, and how recovery has been for him, and when he actually realised that he had had a brain injury.
When I woke up out of my coma and got out of hospital and got discharged from hospital, I began to realise, you know, look back on my life and all the things that I'd done, and I began to see all the mistakes I had made, you know, and began to realise how important my friends and my family were to me. So that's when I realised, yes, the realisations gave me a feeling of being born again. So I had the chance to do everything again, only I could do it with a fresher, approach to it. Mm. Can I just say, Emma?
Of course.
I'm amazed how well you look after
your
really? Injury. What happened to you?
I caught a virus in Vietnam. I basically nearly died. I had like a 4 months in the Royal London Hospital. So, yeah.
Well, you look incredible.
Thank you. getting there. It's a long, long road to recovery, isn't it? Absolutely.
We were playing in the Blues House. It's in LA, on the Strip in LA. We're playing to this crowd of about 2,000 people, and it's owned by Dan Aykroyd, and James Belushi used to own it with him when he was alive. And one day I was looking out into the audience, and there's all these people going, you know, in the front row, and they were getting up on the stage, and they were jumping off the stage into the audience. It's called stage diving.
Yeah.
So I turned around and I took my guitar off.
I've never done that. Never. I bet you've done that.
This is the worst I've done. I took my guitar off and handed it to the roadie who was beside me, and I jumped into the stage, and very luckily the audience caught me and pushed me back onto the stage. So I was delighted having done that. It was very exhilarating.
Wow.
And we had this banjo player called Tommy, and he used to be nicknamed the Beast. And the Beast, very great banjo player, fantastic musician, but he was very large, maybe about 17 stone, and he decided to copy me, so he took a running jump, and the audience saw, oh, look at the size of him, so they all got out of the way, and Tommy jumped, and he jumped, went straight into the audience and hit the ground with a wallop. So he knocked unconscious for about 2 minutes or so. But luckily, he was all right, yeah.
But it's like,
Tommy's passed away. He had he died from alcoholism, but Tommy was fantastic. So I miss him so much.
Mad Dog, do you think that there was moments of madness in your recovery?
There was lots of moments of madness.
There's Did you actually feel like a mad dog at the time? Oh my God, what's going on?
The nickname was given to me by Shane McGowan. He came up to me one day and he looked at me and he said, "You've a very pugilistic look about you." And I said, "Oh yeah." And he said, "I think I'll call you Mad Dog, because there was an awful lot of terrorists at the time would have the name like Mad Dog, like Mad Dog Adair or Mad Dog. There was loads of Mad Dogs in Ireland, so he decided to give me the name Mad Dog. So that stuck with me. Everybody started calling me. Yeah.
So everyone knows you as Mad Dog.
Yeah, Paul Mad Dog McGuinness.
When did you realise that you had a brain injury?
When I woke up in the hospital out of the coma, you know, I started hallucinating and stuff like that. And then my family would come in to visit me, and they had started explaining what had happened. And as I went on, I began to realise I had a brain injury, and then someone brought me in this book, and it was about a guy who played with Orange Juice called Edwin Collins, and he was a musician, and at some point in his life he had suffered a brain injury. So I began to read the book, and then I could identify what had happened to me.
Yeah.
And eventually I moved out of that hospital and I moved to the Homerton in Hackney, and I went to the rehab unit there. And that was much easier because he used to let me go up and walk around the grounds. And at first, because your brain affects everything that you do, you know, couldn't walk. I had to learn how to talk again.
Was everything.
Yeah, everything. To play guitar again, to sing again. And I'm gigging again, starting to play gigs again in pubs and clubs around London. So it's great to have that back. Mm. But they gave me some exercise to do. And every day I used to get up, get into my wheelchair, and I'd take my wheelchair out into the grounds, and when I got in the grounds I'd, you know, lift myself out of the wheelchair and I started teaching myself to walk again.
And was that the hardest part? Because do you think the walking was the hardest part?
Yeah, at first my balance was completely off. I found it very difficult to keep my balance.
Yeah.
But eventually I started running around the hospital for about half an hour every day.
Yeah.
And I started exercising again.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing what the body can do.
And it's incredible because there's nothing like the high you get after exercise, and when you come out of the gym, you know, you feel really good.
Yeah. So you do a lot of gym now.
I do lots of gym now. I used to do it before my accident as well.
Yeah.
In fact, that's what happened when I was coming home from the gym when the car knocked me down.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
For me, during recovery, I found it hard having to relearn pretty much everything and found it kind of scary some of the times. I wondered if Mad Dog ever felt scared and how the future looks for him now.
Well, it never scared me. I just kept on. I got into meditation.
Okay, me too. That's what I'm doing now,
And where I started saying to myself, Paul, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Just go for it. Just be calm, learn, and you'll get over it. Everything, all things must pass.
Yeah, it's easy to say, isn't it? Then you kind of like...
Easy to say, but...
But yeah, you have to really believe it. Yeah,
things do, and meditation helped so much.
That's one thing that I'm doing mindfulness and things like that, that I've had to, that keeps me more strong and my brain centered rather
also,
than I lose
just
that.
Visualizing what you want to do and visualizing yourself doing it, I think helps a lot as well. So visualization, try a bit of that.
Yeah. I haven't tried that, so. Okay. Maybe I will next.
Yeah. I'd just like to thank all the people in the Homerton and everybody in the Homerton Hospital, in the rehab unit. They helped me in my recovery so much.
Yeah.
And also all the people at Silver Lining.
I love Silver Lining.
Well, I haven't been for a while, but I used to go when I got out, and I learned a lot in Silver Lining. It was nice to meet other people who had brain injuries and...
And I quite liked the people at Silver Lining. Yeah. I bonded with them. I found that was a good
also,
thing to do.
I went on a camping trip with them.
Oh, did you?
About a year ago, yes. And I went with my girlfriend because this is the best thing that's happened to me.
Yeah.
Well, since I had the injury, I came out of hospital and, you know, I used to have lots of dreams, and I used to think after meditating what my ambitions are, and one was obviously to get back playing, but the other one was I wasn't in a relationship at the time, so I started thinking I'd love to be in a relationship again, and then I met this fantastic young woman called Dawn who lived over in Hampstead, so I asked her out and we started going out together.
That's amazing.
And it's great to see her.
And fantastic.
It makes really, you know, lift me up.
So how did the brain injury actually affect you? Because obviously mine was the cups of tea and things like that. How has it affected you long term?
Well, you know, my life has changed completely from the way it was. And sometimes I think it's never ending. It just seems to go on and on and on. But then I meditate and let it go in one ear and out the other. And I always see things flowing away. And I started visualising me, you know, my daughter, all the good things that I have to be very pleased about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the birth of my daughter, playing music again, the musicians I played with.
Tell me, do you have any issues with new lyrics and songs
now?
No,
I've just written some new songs.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I'm going to release an EP at the end of the month.
Amazing.
On my own label. It's called Winter in London. And the title track I wrote when I got out of hospital. And I wrote all these lyrics called Winter in London.
So do you suffer with...
Fatigue. No.
You don't have fatigue?
No, I don't
That's
have
good.
Fatigue at all. In fact, I have lots of energy. Mm-hmm. And I don't sleep at night till about maybe one, half one at night. But if I've been to the gym... And the funny thing was, after having a brain injury and being in a wheelchair, I'm so aware, of my recovery and how all the people have got to thank for it, because I've started running on a treadmill and I've started getting up after being in a wheelchair to get up to the speed of to be able to run a kilometre in under 5 minutes is,
amazing.
I'm amazed, yeah. And I owe that to my sister Mary, my sister Debbie, my mum, my dad, my daughter Ashling. I wrote a song about my daughter, it's called New Rose, because when I had Ashling, I was so delighted I had to write a song about it. Mm-hmm. But she's grown up now and she's 21 last year.
Oh, wow.
So she's a young woman.
Oh, fantastic. So are you back at work now?
Well, I'm back playing gigs regularly. I wouldn't say work. I volunteer and I still do some therapy once or twice a week.
Do you? Yeah.
And also, I am back playing with the band again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you think it's been something that has changed your perspective on life?
Totally and completely.
That's
it.
It
couldn't have changed it more. As we said, it's like being reborn. Like, the one thing I realise is how important your family are to you. And it's like the Beatles say, all you need is love, and have the love of your friends and your family and the love of your girlfriend. And just, the love of everybody. I find people are very helpful in London if they see me getting into trouble, or, if I'm travelling somewhere and they see me limping. When I first got out of hospital, they used to see me limping. My limp was quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to offer me a seat on the bus and stuff like that. So, people are very good in London.
That's amazing. Okay. How are you feeling now? How are you getting on?
Well, very well. And, I'm also, physically I mightn't be as well as I was before I had the accident, but I'm getting there. But mentally, I think I'm in a better place because I've had so many realizations. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about, I had got that feeling of being reborn again.
Mm.
So, I can put all the mistakes I made before the accident, I can put them all behind me and I can start trying to live a better life.
Mm-hmm.
And
excellent. And how does the future look for you, Mad Dog?
Oh, the future looks good.
It's so good, isn't it?
Future's so bright I got to wear shades.
That's great.
I'd just like to say that anybody who suffered from a brain injury, I know it's very frustrating and sometimes it feels like it's never going to end, but there is, there is a recovery, and it's, if you just concentrate and listen to professionals and all the people, the therapists who tell you what to do the exercises, and your recovery will come.
You will get there in the end.
Yeah, you will get there in the end, and it feels so good to be much better.
Yeah, it is. But
it does take a long time. It's a never-ending journey.
Long time. Thank you so much. It's been lovely to meet you. Thanks so much, Mad Dog. You definitely haven't been mad.
Well, hopefully I'll see you all one day in Outlaw Heaven. We can buy you a drink at the bar.
Definitely. We're up for a drink then. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for coming
along. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Longest Battle on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Emma Martins, and my guest, the great Mad Dog McGuinness. If you'd like to find out more about how I've coped in my own longest battle, please do visit my own website, thelongestbattle.co.uk.